Paul Quine is standing in Douglas South. He joins me in the studio. Welcome to the studio, Mr. Quine. This obviously has been, I suppose, a bit of a baptism in fire in political terms, because you came in without any political experience. You have now been in Timwald and in the Keys, standing and speaking quite often, over a year. How have you found it?
It's been, well, a mixture of feelings, really. It's exciting, it's challenging, rewarding, upsetting in some ways, because you meet people who've been having a genuinely hard time with things, trying to help them as best you can. So there's a mixture of emotions, but you know, the job itself is wonderful. I thoroughly enjoy it. I like to feel that I've stayed true to what I stood on, looking to address the issues in the local community as best I can. And I'm just looking forward to hopefully being re-elected for a 5-year term, so I can continue very much as I started.
What about the logistics of reading agenda papers, of talking to people, of commanding a room, that sort of thing? How have you found that?
Well, obviously, coming in fairly late in the day, there was a few bills for reading. So for the first week or so, it was quite frantic trying to catch up with the legislation. But you also try and speak to colleagues to see where the legislation is sitting, how they're feeling about its development, and chew over a few issues with them to see if you can put some good and valid inputs into the debate and the wider discussion.
You came in at the same time as Claire Christian, obviously. Both of you have a limited time to impress the electorate, if I put it that way. Is there a rivalry between you?
No. I think we have a very good working relationship. I think from the get-go, really, we've both undertaken to serve the community as best as we can, and we both take on different roles. So there's no real crossover with our work. If one person's dealing with a specific constituency issue, then the other person's copied in on correspondence and kept up to date. So I feel that we're able to work efficiently in that manner and deliver the best for the constituents of Douglas South.
Do you both agree on everything?
Well, no. I mean, I don't think anyone's...
Are there any major things which you disagree with?
No. I couldn't say that. Like I say, it's a very good working relationship. The fact is, we're both independent candidates, so we're going to have our own particular political sort of mantra. We don't stand for a party, so we don't sort of toe.
You do say that, but in your manifesto, you said, publicly acknowledge the former elected representatives Kate Costain and Bill Mullarkey, who worked tirelessly. Obviously, you admire those two.
Well, yeah, I think, and coming in...
And they were Lib Vans at one stage or other, weren't
yes.
they?
Yes. I think that's for what they did for the constituency. I was recently at the Pinewood Social Club speaking to the gentleman down there, Paul Henry, about the... it was actually at the Paul Rose Football Club, but he's the licensee of the Pinewood Social Club, and he was speaking in very glowing terms of the work that Bill Mullarkey did down there to ensure a very good community asset was retained for
difficult
the
boots to fill.
Yes and no. I'm my own man, so I like to think I set my own agenda. I'm not particularly swayed by any sort of party policies or anything like that. So no, I like to think I plough my own furrow, and I like to think that I think that's generally accepted by the people. If you're standing as an independent candidate, that's the sort of thing that you have to maintain.
Have you been round knocking on doors, meeting people?
Well, we're always working in the constituency, so you see people generally quite often by virtue of being there, addressing issues, talking to people. But as actual canvassing goes, no, I haven't started yet. I've been very busy.
I mentioned the general way of things. You make an effort, say, this week, next week, I'll go and see a few more people in this area, a few more people in that area, to get to know the constituency.
Yes, I'd like to... Yeah, I picked up on a lot of issues that were put to me during my canvassing last year, so I like to I like to go around and see people, see how they're getting on, see how we can continue to work to improve the quality of their life, and if the issue's still outstanding, how we can maybe look about another way of addressing it.
Quality of life. I noticed you mentioned when you came in before you got elected antisocial behaviour, low level crime, liaising with police. Is that still your view of things after after a year?
Very much, John. And I like to think that I've worked well in being true to that. There's an excellent thing called the Hills Community Initiative in Douglas South, which involves the MHKs, the councillors, other stakeholders such as teachers from the area and the police. So I like to feel that I struck up a very good working relationship with Sergeant Graham Corran and also PC Graham Best, who is now the community police officer in the area. So I think that's working well. There's a long way to go, of course, but I think a lot of people in the area are certainly more reassured by seeing a more permanent presence of the police in the area.
Just onto that in a moment. Well, rather worryingly, some time ago, you spoke of an active drugs den, which you believed one house was.
Well, yes. There's a, unfortunately, that's a side of life now that's it's fairly prevalent.
Is that still the situation?
I wouldn't like to comment on that. I think also I remarked at the time that these things are intelligence led for the police. So perhaps it would be somewhat remiss to actually speak about a specific house or something like that, because obviously it could have implications if that was to be targeted by a police operation.
You spoke in your manifesto last time of a serving officer, PC Jim Whiteleg, the old-style Bobby in the best traditions. Is that implying some sort of criticism of modern policing?
No, I think policing obviously has evolved since I was a lad. In those days, we had our own policeman in the area, and it was PC Whiteleg in Paul Rose Police Station. He knew all the kids in the area. He would be high visibility presence in the area, walking around on his beat.
But you want Bobby's on the beat, don't you?
Oh yeah, I think but the way they the most, or as it's gauged, has been the most efficient way of policing areas today is through community policing, and I was glad not long after being elected to go and have a meeting with the Chief Constable, Gary Roberts, again another Annika lad, and it was very encouraging to listen to what his vision was for community policing, both now and in the future.
I've been talking about local issues, if I put it that way, in Douglas South. What about the national picture? What are you, apart from obviously COVID, what is the big issue?
Well, the big issue is the economy. You have to have a good, sustainable, diverse economy which benefits us all, because without an economy you haven't got anything. You can have all the idealism that you like, but if you've got no means of paying for it, it's rather like going into a supermarket and seeing a load of well-stocked shelves with nothing in your pocket. You might want everything that's in there, but you can't pay for it.
Have we got something in our pocket? We've paid out $250 million so far.
We have, yeah, about £250 million. But I think reserves are fairly robust. I think we've stood up relatively well, certainly in comparison to competing jurisdictions. I think the money that was spent was well spent. It needed to be spent in the way it was, through things like MIRA, through business support. And I think, by and large, I think we are coming out of the COVID issue probably in a more stronger position than many of our competitors.
It's still a bill to pay, and if you are in the next administration, it'll be harder to argue to give money to certain things.
Well, I think everything always has to make a business case.
I mean, you'll be called upon as a politician, really, to use all your wiles and guile to actually get what you want for the people in your constituency.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've always got to try and push for the people in the constituency to the best of your ability. That's what you're elected to do, to represent them, to take up their causes and to make their case. I think, we like to feel that our economy is in a good position to take the next step now, following the COVID, and you probably won't be surprised when I say that fundamental to that, given my background, is good and sustainable air links.
You've spoken about that, obviously. We're at the moment actually putting down £9 million worth of new runway and taxiway at the moment, so there's a lot being spent on that. And also, there seems to be things going on down there, if I can put it that way, as far as the management is concerned, and also looking to the future of the airport.
Yeah, I made my my position on some of the works well known. The airports have to have routine maintenance. It's part of the ongoing maintenance of a busy airport, that's fine. But certain parts of what's envisaged, I had to say I had to disagree with, namely the widening for runway start extensions, which, speaking in a professional capacity, wasn't needed. But
you say this should have been done at the time, or isn't needed? You say it's not needed at all.
No.
This is so that aircraft can turn around. Enough room to turn around.
No, it's been put forward as that, but there's the actual runway itself. They're purely starter extension strips, so an extension to the takeoff run available. They've got nothing really insofar as improving landing distance performance. So as I said in the House of Keys, it would be a bit of a vanity project. Unfortunately, you know, the money's been approved now, the contract's been signed, and it looks to all intents and purposes as it will go ahead. But like I say, I was quite happy to speak up on the issue. Had I been around sort of previously, a few months back, then I would have had a lot more to say on that.
Well, let's stick with the ports, if I put it that way, but this time the actual port. The sea terminal in Liverpool. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, you know, it's easy to blame COVID, but you can't get away from the fact that the COVID crisis is a contributing factor. You know, the bill's gone up. We're just past, I think, £40 million.
But only a percentage is due to COVID. It seems that other factors have been coming in.
Well, again, perhaps a purely negotiated contract in the first place, and that's why I was supportive and I welcomed the motion to appoint an auditor general to oversee large capital projects in the future.
But don't we have management at these ports to actually make sure these things are?
Well, you would like to think so, wouldn't you? But you know, we an auditor general is someone who you know, hopefully come in and ensure that large capital projects such as this are delivered on time, are on budget. And that those people, those managers who you've just referred to, should they be making decisions, then they're held accountable for those decisions if things take a turn for the worse.
So heads should roll if the finger can be pointed and said, this was the wrong decision.
I think, you know, coming from the private sector and certainly coming from the profession that I was involved in, if you're not up to the task, then you're out the door. And it's as simple as that. It's a very unforgiving profession. So I feel people have to be accountable. They have to explain themselves and they have to explain their actions. So I don't have any truck with people being held accountable. And if they're seen to have been negligent or not up to the task, then being dismissed, yes.
Let's just go on to COVID in a moment. But first, one of the things you thought would be a good idea was a consumer's council in order to achieve the fair pricing of domestic heating.
Yeah.
And you've been in now for a year. Is it possible to do that?
We're on the way. I think addressing the issue with Manx Gas, I think, has been certainly a step in the right direction. I know Chris Thomas, who I know particularly well, has been championing this for a long time. There was a very strong public force led by Barry Murphy, I think, the gentleman who was a very vociferous campaigner for the setting up of a proper regulatory body, and now we're looking at that coming into being. So I very much welcome that. It's long overdue, and it's about time that the consumers of Manx Gas were given a fair deal.
Another thing that you pursued in a summary of your manifesto, if I can put it that way, was traffic. Traffic volumes in and out of Douglas. We need to pursue an environmentally acceptable way. How on earth do we stop the number of cars coming in and out of Douglas?
It's a good question, John, isn't it? And if we only look at the developments that are going on out of town at the moment, you only have to look at Ballasalla, the large development which took place last year at Crosby Hill, and the continued development out in the west. So the way I look at it is that we have to use assets that are there already, or one asset that's there already, and that's the railway line. You know, we have to look at putting on a proper commuter service from the south into Douglas.
Electric trains or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, obviously.
Because part of the track is built over now, isn't it?
If we're
heading west anyway, but
I mean, I think we're not talking about building the Great Wall of China here. We're talking about putting down probably about 12 miles of track back onto a track bed which largely exists. I mean, if you look around Manchester, for instance, I think around about 65 miles of Metropolitan Tramway was relayed. Dublin, something fairly similar.
But that would be one of the routes that people could cycle in on, and that's what people are saying. We need more people on bicycles coming coming in on safe routes.
I quite agree, John, and I would have the cycleway adjacent to the railway line, fenced off for safety, of course, so running straight alongside the railway line. So yeah, we could manage to kill two birds with that stone.
Well, let's go on to COVID. The government obviously has been wrestling with this problem for some time. How do you think they've done?
I think they've done really well. I think there's no standard operating procedures.
Have mistakes been made?
Of course, but none of us are infallible. Fallibility is something that we all possess.
But were there mistakes made that shouldn't have been made?
Well, in hindsight, when we look back, when we wash these things down, then you can always say you could have done something better.
Well, you look at the steam packet.
Yeah, but I think it was fairly naive for anyone to feel that steam packet, and I had a few steam packet employees contacting me at the time who were constituents to flag this up, and also of course people I know in aviation to say, you know, we are doing our best, but it's impossible to go to work, come home, and basically live in isolation from your family.
What about climate change? You actually voted for going for the 2050 date as
yes.
opposed to 2035. Laurie Hooper, I think, put an amendment forward and mm-hmm. he was defeated 7-17. You were one of the 17. So you're saying it's okay to go longer for these targets?
Yeah, I think 2050 is certainly a realisable date. I think 2035 may have been a bit too ambitious, but that's not to say it can't be achieved. So what I think the best course of action was to set a date and look to improve on that date as and when circumstances change. We don't know how things are going to look in 5 years, 10 years or 15 years by 2035. So I think perhaps on the side of caution, looking at 2050 was perhaps...
Some people say we've been too cautious. We need, in this case, things are rushing up on us. We need to be bolder.
But you can't go at these things like a bull at a gate. You know, you have to, like I say, you have to get the economy, because these things have to be paid for. So you have to have the economy right in order to structure the issue or structure to address the issue to ensure that you actually get to those targets. Now, if the economy is doing better than what we envisaged, then perhaps we, and I'd like to hope, of course, we could bring that date forward. We might even look at revising that to 2040, perhaps even 2035 may be achievable. But certainly, I would say 2050 is.
Well, wouldn't it have given a good statement if you said, yes, we will go for 2035?
Well, there's nothing worse than actually, you know, giving
not
a promise
not achieving
something that you don't end up keeping. So, you know, I mean, by not achieving that and then pushing it back so that becomes the subject of criticism. It looks like you're dragging your heels on the issue or you're not addressing it properly. So, like I say, I feel that 2050 certainly is an achievable date, and I'd like to hope that we can improve on that.
The retail sector, and in Douglas, and our main shopping street there, if you walk down it, particularly at the end, there are shops closing, there are shops, empty shops there. What do we do about that?
Well, I mean, it'd be nice to see...
Is it important that we have Strand Street vibrant and healthy?
I grew up in the time when Strand Street was the hustle and bustle in the centre of the island. You know, there was shops of all manners, all small, privately owned shops selling all manner of wares.
But times change, isn't it?
Well, they do. I mean, you've got to look at internet shopping, something that I'm sure we're all guilty of. There won't be anybody, you know, listening to
but
this
are we
interview.
Guilty of it, or is it not just a modern development?
Well, it is. You have to, a lot of people look at price. Sometimes if something can be bought more competitively on the internet, then, of course, people, by virtue of how we feel, we're going to look at doing that. So I feel that, yes, the is an issue with Strand Street. It is sadly declining over the last few years, but I'd like to hope, you know, we could turn the corner and look to
don't we need more than hope, because it is looking a bit battered and weary.
Yeah, but I mean, it'd be nice to hear people in the retail sector coming forward with proposals to such as the Department for Enterprise, and looking to work with those people to address the issues such as Strand Street, some of the shops, and look to turn the corner and to rejuvenate the centre of the town. It can also be done by, of course, getting people living back in the town. So people sort of, you know, live close to the shops.
Well,
so
there
more
used to be the Lots initiative, living over the shop. But,
yes.
But that was rather failed because nobody wanted to live over the top of the shop, I don't think.
Well,
but do you think that's viable? That could be pushed?
I think so. I think, you know, there's all manner of you know, old ideas which are necessarily not out of date, which can be applied to modern living. I think people are very adaptable, and I feel that it would be, you know, a great way to get life back into the town. If people are living near the shops, then they're more inclined to shop local.
Well, you've had just over a year. You're going to have something like 13, 14 months. Are you relishing the prospect of another 5 years if you get given it by the people?
I certainly would. It's been an absolute privilege as a local lad brought up in the area to represent the people of Douglas South since I was elected in the by-election last year. And I'd really like to build on what I've started. Like I say, I've got a lot of hope for the island. I think we're in a good place, and I'd like to play my part constructively in looking to build on what we have.
Paul Quine, thank you very much.
Thank you, John.